हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns the following verses, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.15, 43, 48, 50, to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, Chapter 17, entitled Analysis of the Goal of Devotional Service, Prayojana. Prayojana Vichar. 43. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change in both body and mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Right, so this change in this consciousness, that's the whole aspect, is that that's the goal is that there's a change, there's an experience, right, in connection with Krishna. So we see this is what's going on. So their goal is changing from impersonal Brahman to Bhagavan realization. Right? So that's coming through because they perform devotional service, right? 48. Persons who are very expert and most intelligent in understanding things as they are engage in hearing narrations of the auspicious activities and pastimes of the Lord, which are worth chanting and worth hearing. Such persons do not care even for the highest material benediction, namely liberation, to say nothing of other less important benedictions like the material happiness of the heavenly kingdom. So those who are expert and most intelligent, right? So this is the standard Bhagavatam's talking about. Expert means you understand Krishna consciousness, how it works. And intelligent means that's your determination, that's what you're focused upon. That's the definition of intelligent in Bhagavatam, an expert. Now, occupation is not what we talk about. Does that make sense? Like someone's expert at blowing their nose without making a hole through the tissue or getting anything on their fingers. Right? Are we giving out awards?
Not really.
No. You know, so the point is someone's expert. Right, so there's so many things you can be expert at, but it doesn't mean that that's what we call expert. Does that make sense? So expert means is that you know what to do to elevate the living entity, you know, out of the material world, and that you've understood this and determined that this is what you're going to do. Because just knowing it's one thing, but actually committing to it, that's another thing. So when you commit to it, that's the real thing. Does
that
make sense?
Is that the intelligence aspect?
Yes, intelligence.
That's the commitment.
Yes.
So intelligence is directed at the prayojana.
Yes. So you can see this is prayojana.
Yes.
So that, because otherwise you have scholars that are very expert in the scripture, and they can say all kinds of things and describe all kinds of things, but they're not actually intelligent.
Yes.
Right? So expert means it's based on scriptures, and intelligent means you know what to do with that.
Usually we put intelligence with Abhideya. Usually we put intelligence with Abhideya.
Yes, but the point is the Abhideya gets the prayojana. So where are you putting it? So he's intelligent, so therefore...
Means that, yeah.
Yes. So that's what he's saying here is that they understand things as they are, not as we'd like them.
Which is tempting.
Bhagavad Gita as we would like it.
There was this guy who wrote the Bhagavad Gita as I see it.
I'm sure there is.
I found that one in Mumbai.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Bhagavad Gita, according to my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... So they understand the past auspicious activities and pastimes, because you have the because you're dealing with that, so intelligence is implied. So they don't care for liberation. So we've just gone from the four Kumaras, who now they are on the platform of liberation. They just figured out that bhakti is higher. Right? So those who are expert already understand it, and they're not interested at all in liberation. You know, so let alone anything lower than that, right? The pleasures of the heavenly planets, this, that. That's just not... That you have to be less intelligent. Right? Because we're talking about intelligence on the platform of the soul. If we're talking on the intelligence on the platform of conditioning, then, you know, it's just like, let's say, you have a slug, okay? Now, a slug, you would have to admit, is a lot more intelligent and dynamic than a rock. Right? Put down a slug, put down a rock, come back after an hour. The slug's moved, you know, at 30 centimeters, right? The rock's still sitting there.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you come with your finger, the slug pulls its eyes in. You come with your finger, the rock doesn't move. So you would have to say, in this scientific experiment, then the slug is intelligent. Does that make sense? So the whole point is, these things, you're comparing conditioning, then you can say this is intelligent, that's intelligent. But the point is it's about the soul. That's what we talk about. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? So that understanding, that's what we judge everything by. That defines what's intelligent, what's not intelligent. Right? So if someone's very expert at dealing with material energy, better than anybody, more successful than anybody, we'll say they're a fool if they don't understand God consciousness.
Immature, isn't it?
Yeah, immature. But within this world, they'll be very extolled that this is a very great personality, very successful, you know, knowledgeable, social, in good social standing, you know, very expert at getting things done.
Yeah.
Right? But the Vedas won't consider that actually expert in intelligence. Does that make sense? Yeah? No? Right. Yes.
There's a doubt with Kumaras, it happened really quick that from Brahman to Bhagavan. And then but they didn't have the goal, they were just searching. But for us, we're looking for Bhagavan before. It takes much longer. So how does it work? Because in Prayojana we see Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But they were not in particular looking for Krishna, they were just wandering around.
Mm.
So then the process is much slower in our case.
Mm. Can we split the question?
Sure.
Okay. How long does it take for a bus to hit you? Okay, so then that's that side of the question.
Okay.
Okay. The other is that being on that, they're basically already starting from that platform of liberation. Then they're just, you know, establishing themselves in the knowledge of it and everything. So if you're starting from the liberated platform, there's nothing mundane to get in your way. You're only technically, your anartha is your appreciation of Brahman and not having knowledge of Bhagavan. Does that make sense? There technically isn't really any mundane. It's not like they're attached to their teddy bear or, you know, like that, you know. Have their, you know, their candy bar at 4 in the afternoon or something. You know, they don't have any. There's no home. They don't even have clothes. Right, you know. Does that make sense? You know, walking around with designer skin here. Made by Brahma, you know. So yeah. So therefore, that's why it can be so fast. Is because you're on the transcendental platform, and so you don't have any connection with the material. But when you come in contact with personal transcendental, you can actually appreciate the difference, because there's no misgivings or anything. There's just a lack of knowledge. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, you didn't know about a certain preparation and its taste, but you know taste. Mm-hmm. So then when you taste it, you can really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's like that. So that's why you see it's actually so quick. And why for us it's slower, because we have material conditioning that we think that, you know, this stuff is okay. We have a long list of, you know, hundreds of items here. And then slowly with our practice, we have to start checking them off, that no, this one doesn't work, or actually scratching them off. You know. Becoming Lord and Master of the whole creation. Okay, take that one off. Okay, you know, like that.
Somehow that one seems to find its way back on the list.
Yeah, yeah. No, when everything else goes, yeah, then, you know, well,
just go through the list again.
Yeah, yeah. No, you scratch it off and then it's sitting there nice again.
Yeah. What? How did I just dealt with you?
Yeah. Yes?
So previously we described the karana sharira, which is the desire.
Yes.
You know, like a more subtle thing. So in the case of the kumaras, they didn't have that aspect, like attachment to the Brahman realization. They just...
No. That would be there. So the karana sharira would be there. But at the same time as... Well, it also depends upon how we're counting them. Because at the same time, they're incarnations of Godhead. After Brahma, they're actually the first incarnation.
Yeah.
When it's going. So, I don't remember if they're empowered jivas or if they're in some other tattva. You know, I don't really remember, because you have Sanat Kumar as Cupid. But there's two aspects of Cupid. There's the Vishnu tattva, and then there's the jiva tattva. Yeah. So which one? Because we remember that Prajumna, I think it was that was married to Rati. I think he's the no. Excuse me. The one who got burned up. I think he's the jiva.
Yes.
And but the one who is the son of Krishna, he's the Vishnu tattva. Mm-hmm. So then that one merges into this one for the pastime.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But what's the position of Sanat Kumar? I'm not sure. But in any case, because they're being given in this situation, it doesn't matter. They're giving example for us.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is the Karana Sharira is there that I want to enjoy the experience of Brahman.
Yes.
But you don't have as such the secondary attributes of desire for enjoyment. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You have the primary,
yes,
but not the secondary. So therefore, when they find that there's a happiness beyond Brahman, then they understand it's not to do with the secondary. Right? So then they're able to switch to that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because devotional service is the only thing that can get rid of that karana sharira. Anything else can't. So even that Brahman realization won't get rid of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The difficulty with us is we have that karana sharira, and we have the subtle body, you know, that is connected with, or we're conditioned by. So that's why it will take us longer. But technically it doesn't have to. That's why the examples are given of devotees who surrendered in a moment. And Krishna in the Gita also recommends that.
Okay.
Like that. So we know that it can take from a moment, you know, for our many lifetimes. But the idea is that our determination then will set the speed. You know, it's not that we're in control of it, but if we're more determined, then Krishna, you know, considers that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, like the kid comes up to the father and asks for something. And the father says, no, that's not so. And he drops it, then that's it.
Yeah.
Right? But if the kid keeps coming and giving other, you know, this and that and pestering or coming up with other great ideas why it's the most important thing in the universe, then there's a chance that, okay, this is going to happen. You understand?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. When we're determined, we're focused, then we get. So that's what's happened here, is that the four Kumaras, their focus has just switched. Right? And so then they're getting that benefit. Though, they're still within that aspect of Shantaras. So they've gone from Brahman realization to Shantarasa. Right? So there's still not that sense of ownership that's mentioned. But it's still devotional service because they're always hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord. But it's about, you know, appreciating the glories and everything like that. So it's neutral. It's not against the Lord, but it's not personally dynamic. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's the beginning of the dynamic devotional service that you're there. That's a platform from which you could go further. But we see in their pastime, they don't, because they're the epitome of this position. And showing how that going from, basically you could say from Brahman to, from liberation to Brahma-Bhuta. They're making that switch. Is that? Yes.
Regarding the Kumaras, after they saw the Lord, they had this transformation.
Yes.
Nothing changed in their life, actually.
What changes in their life?
Nothing. So it
how they know how they think. Externally is no change, but internally there is.
But their service, they were still wandering mendicants.
Yes, but now when they'll preach, they'll talk about devotional service as opposed to just the platform of Brahman. But, you know, so before, in any case, they're an authority on that platform of Brahman because they're well situated. But now, so people could ask them about that. But now they can discuss about devotional service. So depending upon the audience, of course, they're going to introduce that aspect or not. It means if they're not devotees, then they may not introduce it. They'll hint at it, but unless somebody takes the bait, then they won't go further. You know, because you're dealing with these big, big sages and things like that. But for those who are devotees, then it's very nice. That's it. Okay. So we're just trying to set the goal that devotional service is actually the only goal of the soul. Liberation is enough interest, and if liberation is not of interest, then definitely any material benefit that would not be there. Right? So that's where we're adjusting the standard. Right? Because that's then dealing with the soul. If we're dealing with conditioning, then we drop it down to wherever is our level of material competence. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, I don't have anything, so getting a used car, now that would be fabulous. You know, up to, you know, okay, we got the silver and black Rolls Royce. Now I'm really toying with whether I should get a pink one. You know, for fun with it.
Yeah.
You know, the other one's when you show up in front of the hotel, but this is for, you know, going out for a ride. Yeah.
What was that lead you were thinking about? We can surrender with one moment or
okay. Yeah, I was worried you were going to ask about the blowing your nose part.
No, I just wonder what makes the difference in that surrender from what we are like practicing now and that what we're doing about.
But is our surrender constant?
I mean, what is the difference? I'm practicing this constant.
That determination that this is what I'm going to do and nothing else is important. Because we'll go, yes, I'm surrendering to Krishna and this and that and all these things and, oh, hey, I forgot to, you know, put the pot out to get the milk today. Does that make sense?
Milk is for Krishna.
That's there. It's not that they're not aware. See, that's the difficulty. For us, it's one or the other. It's like this. I'm not the car, but I can avoid bumping into other cars driving down the road. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the thing is we're not this conditioning, but we know how to use it properly to serve Krishna. It's just a perspective. Because we tend to take what conditioning we have and then figure out ways to connect it to Krishna. Right? So that's Krishna conscious. But then Krishna points out, as you become well adjusted with that, then the next step to take is that it's about Krishna. And therefore, whatever facilities and abilities you have, then that is being engaged to please Krishna's service. But you're starting with Krishna, not with us. We always start with ourselves. What do I like? Rather than, what would Krishna like?
So when you enter into this kind of prayer, that I don't whatever you want,
It's the prayer is there, so that's the expression, but that has to be the mentality. That's what we're showing here, is the mentality is there. But as much as you pointed out, externally nothing's changed in the Kumaras. You know, it's not like now they, after coming in God realization, then you see them wearing an Armani suit or something. Right? Too small. They get especially tailored. Come on, that's what you have. What's that street in London?
Yeah, I don't know the street.
Huh? Yeah, Selma Road. Yeah, so that's so you know, they'll tailor it for them. Don't worry. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah, there was a dwarf couple in the turn of the century that worked in the circus. But they had regular clothes, and they were only this big. So, yeah, it works. That happens. But nothing changes. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's the consciousness that we're trying to get. That's why this is in Prayojana. The same elements you could also bring out in Navideya or something, but the point is Prayojana, because the goal, the mentality towards it, that's what's changed. So we tend to have the goal of pleasing Krishna, but we have a lot of other smaller goals kind of in between us and that. You understand? So that's the difference. So when all those are gone and it's only Krishna, then that's what we're trying to get to. Right? But it doesn't mean that we don't deal with the conditioning. Like Arjuna, he's very expert in using his martial knowledge for Krishna's satisfaction, but he's doing it to please Krishna. Well, before he was going to use it to please himself. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is we think, what is it that I do externally that can change? You know, I mean, you can try it from here, smell lots of Tulsi leaves, you know. on the left side of the Radha Madhava, you know, there's a little door. You just go in the door on the left side of that, then there's a whole pile of Mahaprasad, you know, Tulsi garlands and that. You know, get down on your hands and stick your head in there, you know, and then see if that does anything for you or something. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in this point, it's not talking about the externals, because technically there is no externals here. Right? In this pastime. So all that's happened is that internal element has changed. Where they are, in other words, they've heard about, by the grace of Brahma and the Lord, they've heard about the Bhagavan realization. But they only have knowledge. But now, smelling the Tulsi leaves, now they get realized knowledge. So they switch and they take up the devotional process. So they're thinking about the Lord, but before it's thinking about an analyzation on the platform of Gyan. Now it's on the platform of Bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's why we begin. We follow the program. We have the what we do, what we don't do, and all that. But it's not that we have to change that. It's now about the understanding and commitment to that. That's what changes. Does that make sense? But it's not that, you know, as you advance, your bead bag changes or something. Like that. And as, you know, people go by, you can tell, ooh, you know. He's got the Uttamadakari bead bag. It floats. It floats. Yeah, yeah, you know, it's like that. Someone comes along, Charya Narita just takes his hand out of the bead bag, takes it, Charya Narita. it's not that. We do that. Someone has, you know, something fancier, they must be more advanced. You know? Someone says, the lady with the better sari, she's more advanced than the others. Right? Yeah.
Depends who you ask.
Yeah, depends who you ask. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that commitment to Krishna. Is that means the position is better, but it's not necessarily that you're taking advantage of it is better. But on the social platform, position is respected. Just like we don't hear of Draupadi wearing a white sari. Right? But we'd have to admit she is, you know, advanced.
She's up there.
Yeah. Does that make sense? But the position will be respected. Does that make sense? So socially, that's how it's done, and that's the interactive. Because otherwise, how do we know that someone has respect for authority? Unless the social elements of authority we respect. And if we don't, then there's a doubt, will you actually respect Krishna's authority or Guru's authority? We say we do, but the point is we're seeing them separate, God separate from his creation. So that means we only partially do. Does that make sense? So that's why we have both the philosophical and the cultural. Because the culture is how we can express it. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's interesting in this pastime that the position didn't match their mood. So this was the whole confusion with Jaya and Vijaya, because they saw small kids.
Right.
So they
yes,
checked
yes, them. Yes, yes, yes.
So sometimes we're also confused because it doesn't match. We see the position, we don't know the mood.
Yes.
So it's like that.
Yes, no, it happens. You know, it's just like here. It's that, you know, you have the, you know, the 50-year-old lady, you know, and then, you know, who is, you know, still whatever it is, grihasta or like this kind of thing. And then you have the 20-year-old girl with the shaved head and the white sari. So now what do? Of course, sorry. And so, what's the thing? So, then it's a matter of, okay, by age, the one's senior to the other. But by social position, the one in the white sari is in a higher. Because she's not functioning within the grihastha ashram. So that means then there has to be mutual respect there. Because the younger one has to respect the older one and deal as they're older, but it doesn't mean that they're necessarily older as far as connection with the world. Does that make sense? So that's why then the older one respects the younger one for being able to do that when they can't do that. But, you know, it's kind of like, it's, you know, you're going from, you know, 250 saris that you've cultivated over a long time. You know, it means to get 250 means you've gone through 1,000, right? You know, getting them, getting rid of them, making rags out of them, you know, whatever it is. You know, giving them gifts to someone else, right? Like that. And then you're going to end up with 5 white ones. You know, and then, and we're just talking sorry. So what about the bead bags, the bindis, you know, I mean, yeah. So, this person is doing it. And even if you say, oh, we've seen so many of them come and go, point is they're doing it now. Are you doing it? No. So that's the thing. So it's, that's like what you're saying here. It's the social things. Then there's always that, because in the Vedic you always have to consider all of them. The difficulty is from the Western standpoint, we tend to just want to take something and just make that all encompassing. You know, but that's the thing in the Vedic, all the different elements of respect, you have to consider all of them in the relationship. So one person's respecting this person for this and this, and they're respecting them for other things. Yeah, so it's like that. So if those things are in place, things work nicely. You know, it's like the big industrialist, then, and the person in administration. So both of them have to respect each other for their position, because one is really wealthy, but the other one has administrative power. Right? And if that mutual respect is there, then they'll deal properly. But in the modern, it's not necessarily like that. The guy with the money, because the other guy has a campaign, so he runs it, and he's on the top of the pile. That's where things fall apart. Because as soon as economics becomes more important than administration, then the whole social fabric falls apart. Because then you can make money off of anything, rather than just off of things that people require. Is that make sense? Yeah. So that's why the Vedic is actually a superior system. So we look at it that, oh, well, you know, wearing this clothes or eating this food, I can't do that, so I don't follow the Vedas. But the real point is I can't follow the Vedas because I don't have the character to. Because that means I have to respect authority. I have to deal properly with people. I can't just find a fault and therefore shoot my mouth off and go on the internet and send out things to everybody and make the world, you know what's right and just. I can't do that. But I can't control myself. The reason people are on these internet things and say what they say is because they do not have the capacity to not say it. It's not that, yes, I'm informing the world. Right? They get this false idea from the journalist. A journalist does what he does because he gets paid. If he didn't get paid, there would be no investigative journalists. It's money, that's all. And because it's money, they don't care if they ruin anybody's life, make anybody's life better. It's just that if you can make it better, it looks better. But the point is you should look like it's truth and knowledge. No, it's money. And even if you get something fabulous, the paper or the magazine won't print it if they don't think they're going to get money. And even if they could get money, but then the repercussion from these big industrials that they just did a thing on is going to impact on them and their paper is going to fall apart, they don't publish it. So that's the thing, it's character that the Vedas... To follow the Varnashram means you have to have character. So sometimes devotees ask, why can't we establish Varnashram? The simple point is character. It has nothing to do with, oh, but the Kshatriyas don't have land, so that's what I just heard the other day. Kshatriyas don't have land, so therefore we can't follow Varnashram. It has nothing to do with that. We don't have the character, that's why we can't follow Varnashram. You know, it's like Chandragupta. Right? Then Chanakya's, I mean, they're coming along, and then they see him, and he's resting. And they're wondering what he's doing. So then they call him. He doesn't move. And he's awake, but his back's to them. They make all kinds of noise, this and that. He doesn't move. And then, when they finish the thing, in his own pace, then he sits up and then looks and says, okay, what's happening? Then they can understand, we're not dealing with an ordinary person here. Because anybody else, they're asleep, we made all this noise, they get up and be afraid of what's happening, or get angry at that. He just coolly. That's a Kshatriya. You know, there's another story. I mean, that's why these stories are here, to show these things, right? Another one is that there's a princess, but there's no heir to the throne. But the king considers that the princess is the most intelligent person in the kingdom. She'll pick the king. So then she sets some tax. So the point is this, who marries her will be the king. So she'll only marry the person who can be the king. So then the ministers are talking about different people and all this and that. And so then I think it was the general of the army, like this. So then they said, the princess wants to see you, because everybody knows this is the scene, right? And so the general comes running immediately. And the princess sees this and says, I couldn't marry this guy. I call, he comes running, what's this? like that. And so then he's rejected. But this other one, then he's been found. So then he's called. The minister comes. I mean, the messenger comes in, minister comes in, says she's calling. He says, okay, I'll keep going. The minister leaves and goes back. And she said, what did he do? He said, yes, I'm coming. And sat there. She goes, okay, this guy looks interesting. Right? And then he gets ready and he comes, walks nicely, walks in and said, you know, that she asked for him. So what is that? How is it able to do it? A character. Right? Another old story is that this one, I forget how it happened, but he was the small child. Very small. Somehow or another, son of a king, he got lost in the forest. And somehow they grew up in the forest. I don't remember if animals took care of him or tribals or however it was. And so then, it wasn't Romulus. And like that. And so then, he came... somehow or another came upon, he was bigger, and he came upon a Brahmin's hut or something, there was maybe a hunting party out for the king or something, or they were going, and then they found him. And, so they start interacting with him, and they find he hasn't eaten in days. So they invite him in and everything to come and have a meal. He asks if he can take a bath first. Right? He goes, takes his bath and everything like that. Then he sits down and then he offers prayers. Then he eats. And all the time, the minister is watching this. And he was saying, if I hadn't eaten in 3 days, I wouldn't bother with the bath nor the prayers. I'd just eat. So who is this guy? He's not an ordinary person. He has to be of nobility. Otherwise, how does he control himself? Does that make sense? So these are the reasons that we're unable to practice Varnasha. Right? So what we can do, we do. But what we're successful at, that's great. Where the weaknesses are is simply because of lack of character. So where there is some character, we're able to apply it. And where we don't have the character, that's where it's weak. Does that make sense? But the good point is devotional service is what generates all good qualities. Therefore, with time practicing, then one can follow actually the Vedic system. But devotional service is not about that I'm following Varnashram, therefore I'm a good devotee. It's because I, hear, chant, and remember about Krishna, therefore I'm a good devotee. So even if someone hasn't developed all the cultural traits one would expect, if one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, one's still a devotee. And these other things will come with time. So that's not the important thing. Does that make sense? So that's where it starts to get confusing. Because you have, let us say, nowadays you could say, in general, devotees are a bit more, you could say, socially aware and culturally deal nicely. They dress better, behave better on one level. Right? But in general, the intensity of the commitment to Krishna consciousness may not be as much as it was earlier. Right? Because you've gone from temple life into community life. So it's going to take a time for the community to come up to that intensity. right? Just like the, you know, when the temple started, then they're a little bit, you know, you see those in 66, everyone's just hanging around, you know, Prabhupada's upstairs alone cooking, they all come up, eat, walk back downstairs, continue talking, you know, Prabhupada has to wash the dishes, you know, so you do have that, but once it developed, then it became very strong, so the same way as communities knew, but because of either their own conditioning, because of their lack of understanding of the connection between the practice of Krishna consciousness and the culture and all that, they were tended to be a bit rough and ready. You know? Though there was plenty of examples of people who were, you know, pleasantly behaved, but there was also plenty of rough and ready. So that's where it gets confusing, is how can these two go together? But it does. That's the way it works. Yeah, so this element of contradiction. So what are we, but what we do is we look at that good part and we don't worry about the bad part. Just like, let's say, Versailles. What do we think about? What is our general impression of Versailles?
Nice.
Hmm?
Sophisticated.
Nice. Big, very sophisticated, very developed, and everything like that. You know that there's not one toilet in Versailles? So what does that mean? Means they use the hallway. They put up a little screen, bring a bedpan, and they use the hallway.
Yeah. Not refined.
Huh?
No.
You understand? So this is a little bit of a contradiction. But we don't worry about that part. We worry about, you know, the grandeur and everything else. Because that's where they focus, that's where they develop. Right, but now you know you're taking a bunch of Gauls who are, you know, known to, they gave Caesar so much trouble, and he's the only one that conquered them. All the other generals could not conquer them, so you have a tough bunch, right? And so this now has just gotten a little money, so now they become sophisticated on that side. It doesn't mean that the other habits have changed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But we don't worry about that. So the same way, same principle in devotional service, for ourselves we'll worry about it, but for others we don't. We see that commitment, that determination, because it's about that mood. And with time, that mood will be reflected outside. You can see it. Does that make sense? So if you're not responsible for someone, you don't worry about it. You know, unless they're going to bother you. Right? If you're responsible, then you worry about it. Then you point out the details. But the problem with the internet is who's asked them to be responsible. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the thing. The First Amendment was there so that people who had something valuable to say could say it. It's not there that any Tom, Dick, or Harry can say whatever they like, you know, in any situation to anybody. That's not what it was for.
Yeah, it was just for the university students. It wasn't for general public.
No. It was that you had a particular philosophical, religious, or political view. You could express it and not have to worry about, you know, being, you know, hung the next day or shot. You know, so it was more for that furthering understanding. It wasn't that you write any song you want using, you know, words with no more than four or no less than four letters, and then that's called freedom of speech.
I think their mistake was they took for granted that freedom of speech also means responsibility of speech.
Yes, because they were responsible. They just took it that that's normal. They were gentlemen. They didn't realize that, you know, rogues and rascals would use it. That's why there's a weakness in any speculative system. The Vedic already includes that, you know, so that everyone's taken care of. Because in the Vedic thing, even the tribal is taken care of. Right? They have their facility. What is their that's theirs. No one else bothers them. If that's the tribal's kingdom, you don't bother them.
Why would you?
Yeah, that's there. But also, is that being tribals means they're out in the forest. Where does all the raw materials come from? The forest. That means they're going to have all kinds of stuff that's useful for the civilized society. So therefore, if you have a proper trade agreement with them, then they get the stuff they need. So they're protected. They can live because they don't really require anything from you because they take it from the forest. You know. So that's the Vedic will do that. You know, so you get less, you know, because it only now and again, because these tribals are not stupid. Right? They're not like sophisticated men who go in and wipe out everything and there's nothing left. Right? They know that every year this much you can get. Right? So that's all. It's just like I think it was with the Incas. Like that. There was the what do you call it? Vicuña. You know Vicuña? No one knows Vicuña. And you're from the place and you don't know Vicuña. Yeah. You said you were from somewhere down in South America.
No, I grew up in Spain.
Oh, completely, okay. No one has Vicuña? You know llama?
Llama?
Yeah. You know alpaca?
Yes.
You know Vicuña? No, okay. So then it's off the radar. Vicuñas are little dinky alpacas. And so their fur is the finest in the world, finer than cashmere, finer than anything. It's the most expensive fabric there is in the world. But you get half a million tons of cashmere a year, but you only get 5,000 tons of vicuña a year. So when the Incas were there, there were millions of them. And every couple of years, not every year even, every couple of years, they would go out and they'd have this special ritual and go and round them all up. And then they would collect the hair and then let them all go. And because it was so rare, it was only used for the Inca, you know, and the royal family. You know, so everything they had was made out of that. You know, your clothes, your blankets, your everything. So they knew how much often you could take it, how much you deal, and if you want more of it, you just have to let the animals get more. Right? But then when the Westerners came in, you know, our glorious conquistadors, yes, then they come in, and instead of, you know, following this, why, hey, you have to wait years, they just shoot them all. And you take the pelts back. Right? And so then they reduce down to the point where they're almost extinct. So that's the difference. The tribals aren't so stupid. Because they look at it, this is how much you get, that's all you're going to get. Well, the sophisticated man is so greedy, he's got to have tomorrow. You know, so that's the difficulty. So we're saying in the Vedic culture, because that's how they live, that's how much you got of these things. And then accordingly, then it was used. But it's sustainable. Well, now it's there, it's a fad, everybody's into it, and then they make it extinct. You know, the tribals are living with the dodos for thousands of years. White man comes in, and I forget, in a very short time, they're all dead. Huh? Yeah. You know, so like that. They're just not, you know, so now the question is, who's the dodo?
The Dutch.
What?
The Dutch.
Yeah. Does this make sense? So the point we're coming down to is that character. And that character is then what defines the values, your desires and values. So you can see is that the Kumaras, because they are on the liberated platform, they won't have as such what we call material desires on the platform of karma. So it's the range. Karma is very wide. Jnan is just Brahman. So it's pretty, you know, focused. it would defeat the nature of the discussion if it was more than one. You know. So you have one, and the other you have unlimited. So therefore, to go from that one into spiritual variety then is easy. But for us to go from material variety to spiritual variety, then it's a little harder. If the situation is done, is created nicely, the women can make that switch very easy. But the men have to go from variety to one to spiritual variety.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, but the point is that that's all you have to do. So it's not actually a change in anything you're doing. That's what Prabhupada makes the point, is you don't have to change anything. And so it's not about, oh, we don't have to change. See, we don't have to. No, that's attachment. You don't have to change means you have to change your consciousness. Because if I say, oh, I can do whatever I'm doing, you're not changing your consciousness. Is that work?
Yeah.
So if one continues at this with that focus, then it becomes very quickly. Because the power of bhakti is way stronger than karma jnana. Like that. And if it can work so nicely for the four kumaras, why won't it work for us?
Huh? If we want it.
Huh? If we want. So that's the whole thing. It comes out of desire. You see, you know, they're interested. So they've heard about the Supreme Lord. They don't have the experience, but since they happen to be passing by, they figure, hey, let's go in and then check it out and see what Brahma's talking about. You know? Okay, 50. O Lord, we therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your eternal form as the personality of Godhead, which you have so kindly manifested before us. Your supreme eternal form cannot be seen by unfortunate, less intelligent persons, but we are so much satisfied in our mind and vision to see it. So here, we're always talking about eternal, because that's the platform sat that they've been functioning on. But now they're seeing that the personality of God, his form, that's the real element of eternality that is important. Right?
Yes.
Because otherwise, then they're just taking that the eternality itself is important. No, it's the eternality of the transcendental position or the form of the Lord. Right? So his name, form, qualities, pastimes, that eternality, that's what's important. Yes.
Can we say your eternal form as the personality of Godhead is like Sat Chit Ananda?
I mean, you can, but I'm just saying is. But here is that they're bringing out this aspect because they could talk about his pastimes, yes. About how he's the, you know, the ultimate goal. They could so many things, but. In nature, they will talk about these things. So we can see is that their goal is shifted from eternality being their goal to the personality of Godhead, the form, as the goal.
Yes.
Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Important verses. How the Kumaras became devotees. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change both in mind and body, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Yeah. So therefore, by engaging them, their natural position in the Lord's service, then you know, it worked.
Yes.
Chapter 16, the two doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, Jaya and Vijaya, cursed by the sages. Pratigya, Lord success selected Jaya and Vijaya, desiring to fight in the material world. The Pratigya of this chapter is expressed in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 26. In Bhagavad Gita 4.8, also it is said that the Lord appears just to give protection to the devotees and to annihilate the non-devotees. The non-devotees are found in the material world, not in the spiritual world. Therefore, when the Lord wants to fight, he has to come to this world, but who will fight with the Supreme Lord? No one is able to fight with him. Therefore, because the Lord's pastimes in the material world are always performed with his associates, not with others, he has to find some devotee who will play the part of an enemy. Thus, Jaya and Vijaya were selected by the Lord to fight with him in the material world. And that was the reason the sages came to see him, and accidentally the doorkeepers were cursed.
Fighting
with the demons in Vrindavan. It's on the same principle. So the principle is to please the devotees in that, protect the devotees. So he does that himself, because then it makes all kinds of nice pastimes. Because there, the killing of those demons, then the acharyas give the point that these are removal of specific anartas from the heart of the devotees. Right? Because when the Lord performs his prakat pastimes, he's coming with eternal associates. So that's the core of the pastimes. But you have a whole lot of devotees who are coming up from the material world, and who are now, you know, trying getting from that platform of bhava to prema. So there's things to be removed. You know, there it's the subtleties. For us, reading it's the gross. Right? But those elements are there. So then one goes through, and then one is fully qualified to take part in the eternal pastimes. Okay?
Vijaya, just for the Lord's.
It seems to be more just for having a good fight. Because in these other ones, it's just like they attack and they just kind of pick them up and throw them or spin them around, throw them up in a tree, or, you know, it's just killing the demon. It's not to be sporting with them. But you see with Jayan Vijay, he's sporting. You know, he says something, the Lord makes comments, you know, there's fighting, it goes back and forth, you know, so it's like, yeah.
The fighting itself becomes a...
Yeah, the fighting itself becomes the important element. You know, plus it's on a very major level. You know, here you have this small mystic yogi who's not that big of a thing. You have someone who, when they're born, they grow up to the height of, you know, their heads touching the clouds. And they just roam around the universe just creating trouble. You know, so this is, you know, this is... You know, a bit of a fight. You know, at least as close as you're going to get to a bit of a fight. So. Vriti. The Lord has a fighting spirit because there are non-devotees in the spiritual world. There are no non-devotees in the spiritual world. He has to come to the material world in order to fight. As his pastimes are performed amongst his associates, he needed to arrange for devotees to play the part of demons. This was his plan, and when their service was complete, they returned back home to Vaikuntha. Addressing the Kumaras, the Lord said, O Brahmanas, know that the punishment you inflicted on them was originally ordained by me, and therefore they will fall to a birth in a demoniac family, but they will be firmly united with me in thought through mental concentration intensified by anger. Right, so they'll use a secondary rasa instead of now a primary rasa. And they will return to my presence shortly. Srila Prabhupada continues in the rest of his purport to 26. Okay. It was the Lord's desire to send them to the material world, not perpetually, but for some time. Therefore, just as on a theatrical stage, someone takes the part of enemy to the proprietor of the stage, although the play is for a short time and there is no permanent enmity between the servant and the proprietor. So the Surajanas, devotees, were cursed by the sages to go to the Asurajana, or atheistic families. That a devotee should come into an atheistic family is surprising, but is simply a show. After finishing their mock fighting, both the devotee and the Lord are again associated in the spiritual planets. That is very explicitly explained here. The conclusion is that no one falls from the spiritual world or Vaikuntha planet, for it is the eternal abode. But sometimes, as the Lord's desires, devotees come into this material world as preachers or as atheists. In each case, we must understand that there is a plan of the Lord. Lord Buddha, for example, was an incarnation, yet he preached atheism. There is no God. But actually, there was a plan behind this, as explained in the Bhagavatam. So because it's temporary, that's the whole point. So no one actually comes here. Right? So Jayan Vijay coming here are not called Nityabhadas. Right? Because they're just coming for three births and going back. Or a preacher will come, you know, and come for a lifetime or whatever is the plan and then go back. We're the ones that are stuck here. We have the nomenclature Nityabhada. So we shouldn't consider their position like ours. Like we'll see when we get into the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that when Gopa Kumara is going through the spiritual sky, he's seeing this continuous line of devotees going from Vaikuntha down to the material world. They're, you know, going in groups and they're talking and smiling and on their way down to appear as preachers. Like, you know, it's not just one comes here and one comes there. You know, there's unlimited of them just coming down at all times because there's unlimited universes. So, you know, plenty of room for everybody. So it's not that the spiritual sky is so limited that there's only one person to send down. And factually, he's not even a separate person. You have to come yourself, but, you know, kind of make it out that there's two of you. You know, and because then they can't explain other things, then there's three of you, and that, yeah. So the spiritual world's got a bit more happening then. Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 92. Right? At least in the other group, there's 600,000. You know, at least, but here it's only. Yeah. Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 92. Okay. Commentary discusses the Priti. Okay. I guess it's supposed to be the, right? The Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 92 commentary discusses the occurrences surrounding the pastimes of Jayavichaya. And Jiva Goswami intimates that the devotional relationship between the Lord and his gatekeepers was greater than that between the Lord and the Kumaras. The devotees may also become attracted to the Supreme Lord directly is seen in the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3:15:43. When the breeze carrying the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead entered the nostrils of those sages, they experienced a change both in body and in mind, even though they were attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Right? Because in mind, now they see this is important, there's an attraction. When before, Brahman means no attraction to anything. You're just situated in Brahman. And then definitely because of that, there is going to be no bodily transformations. Right, because to have a bodily transformation, that means it must be a manifestation of a strong, condition of the mind. And they don't have such things. So for them to have this, then they are understanding that this is devotional. Right, that's why this verse keeps coming up again and again. In this way, the impersonalist may renounce the impersonal idea. Then they attain the results of becoming attracted to the Lord. The Supreme Lord. So then they get rati, right? So it goes from just being on the platform of liberation that, you know, it's just a tasta to rati, right? But we understand that even that element of rati is still in the tatasta region until it gets to prema. Right? The result is they become wrapped in meditation on the Lord. Eventually they may also see the Supreme Lord directly. The personal associates of the Supreme Lord directly serve the Lord again and again, eternally. For this reason, the good fortune of the Lord's personal associates is very great. Right, so they're talking about, they're again and again serving, but they're also talking about the impersonalists may give that up and take up devotional service. The Supreme Lord, his personal associates, and some devotees first directly seeing the Lord, are described in Srimad Bhagavatam's account of the curse placed upon Jayavijaya. In that account it is said, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15:37, 38, 40. Accompanied by his spouse, the goddess of fortune, he, the Supreme Lord, went to the spot on those very feet sought for by recluses and great sages. The sages headed by Shaunaka Rishi saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who was formerly visible only within their hearts in a static trance, had now actually become visible to their eyes. As he came forward, accompanied by his own associates bearing all paraphernalia, such as an umbrella and a chamra fan, the white bunches of hair moved very gently like two swans. And due to their favorable breeze, the pearls garlanding the umbrella also moved, like drops of nectar falling from the white full moon or ice melting due to an incident. He rested one of his hands on the shoulder of Garuda, his carrier. In these verses, it is clear that Jaya and Vijaya were the Supreme Lord's personal associates. The four Kumaras, however, were more distantly associated with the Lord, associated in the mood of awe and reverence. That Jaya and Vijaya were personal associates of the Lord and the four Kumaras were not is confirmed by these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So the Lord's coming with Lakshmi, the associates that are always with him, and then we come out and we see that then Jaya and Vijaya are devotees who are his associates but who are not always personal associates. You understand? So they would be living on the same planet. Right? The other ones would be personal associates. Does that make sense? So you're different kinds of liberation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah?
Can we say they're in the Dasya Rasa? Jaya and Vijaya?
Yes, they would be in Dasya Rasa. Like that. Because they're thinking about how to serve the Lord, how to please the Lord. So they're thinking about it's their Lord. You know, so it's not a philosophical discussion as much like the Kumaras. Right. So it's that, it means, it's not that it's not philosophy, but it has that devotional application.
What did you say
about the associates of the Lord? More personal and personal? Those who no, I'm saying, just like you have Saloka, you're on the same planet as the Lord, but it's not necessarily always with the Lord. Yes. You know, or other, you know, they're like we heard before, they're flying around their airplanes and they come and they do some service and then go back home. But you have those who are always there, always with the Lord.
Like Shri.
Yeah, Shri, her maid servants. There's going to be people that are always with the Lord. Does that make sense? Or at least there're going to be more. But the examples, because he said there's three kinds. The Lord's personal associates. Oh wait, here. Personal associates, some devotees, and some two. And some devotees first directly seeing the Lord. She's just talking about two. So they're counted within the personal associates. Right. So it's pointing out is actually the position is more unique than the Kumaras. But the point is we're not discussing their taking up devotional service. Right? So we're discussing the Kumaras taking it. So that's why it becomes the prominent aspect within this. Right? So that's all combined with the Lord's desire for fighting and Jaya and Vijaya having that desire to serve the Lord in that way. Therefore, then this whole thing was arranged. So the Lord gets the benefit of the pastime with his devotees and fighting. And the Kumaras get the benefit of becoming devotees. And we get to see that. Because otherwise, generally, most of the time, I mean, you'll see a prominence of the pastimes of those engaging karma in the Lord's service. Right? It's not very often we get to see Gyan engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Like that. So most of the time it's you have, you know, Brahmins. I mean, you do have sages, but generally it's about the interaction, the social things that are going on, the grihasthas, their engagement, the kings. These are your prominent stories.
The Lord desired to fight, and Jaya Vijaya happened to be the ones that he chosen. Obey, volunteer. But sometimes when you are,
you mean somebody came out and you know there's you know everybody's doing this stuff and then somebody comes down the steps and then goes and stands up on something and goes, hello, hey, get any attention here, and like that.
We need two
the Lord's looking for, two guys to volunteer. And, you know.
No, because it came as a surprise to them. So they have to understand that it's going to work. Or am I implying
from much? I'm not sure. Maybe it'll come up in the commentary. But you don't remember. It's that I've heard it, you know, describe that there's the acharyas are discussing how the Jaya and Vijaya are sitting and discussing about the Lord because they're, you know, fighters, right? That's why they're the doorkeepers, right? You know, garland makers, they probably wouldn't make them, you know, like that. So they're thinking now we can only have these qualities if they come from the Lord. And if the Lord doesn't have these qualities, that would be incomplete. So he must have this quality of fighting. But then at the same time, is if he wanted to fight for fun, for sport, who would he fight with? Because no one is qualified enough. So the only ones that are qualified enough, you know, at least of all the devotees, would be themselves. So they're just thinking that, you know, therefore if the Lord ever wanted to fight, then they would be the proper choice. But they're just discussing like that. They're just thinking like that. They're not, how do you say? They're not volunteering. They're just having, you know, you're standing at the gate all day. It's not that they don't talk to each other. No, the Lord's in, he knows these things. So, just like how is it, you know, he just shows up just at that moment. So therefore, then it's arranged that the four Kumaras happen to be, you know, just in the neighborhood. And so they decide to go see the Lord. And then it just works out that Jayan Vijay stopped them, and then they cursed them, because they shouldn't have stopped them, and the Kumar shouldn't have cursed. And even if it's going to happen, the Lord knows, so he could have come and stopped it, as we discussed yesterday. Then we would have just gotten nice discussions and that. But you wouldn't have the whole other, you know, stories in the Bhagavatam of these Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu and Ravana and everybody like that. Right? So, therefore, he comes just after, you know. And so then, okay, then that worked out. And it's just like Krishna, forget who it was. Yeah, I don't remember who it was. Somebody cursed that the Yadu dynasty would be destroyed after 28 years. Somebody. Maybe it was Gandhari.
Gandhari.
Yeah, Gandhari. You know, she was not very pleased with her dynasty kind of coming to an abrupt end. Right? So she made that curse. And then Krishna, you know, he doesn't, these things don't have an effect on him. But he thought, okay, I was wondering how we're going to wind up the dwarka pastime. So he just said, okay, let this curse be the cause. You know what I'm saying? That's why it says that the Yadavas then were under the influence of this curse. Therefore, they were fighting with each other and all that. It wasn't just, we say it because they were drunk, but that's not, the people get drunk and they don't, you know, completely wipe out their whole thing. Because, you know.
Slowly it works in that direction.
Yeah, but that's more, yeah. But that's, it's just like, the point is you don't want it, seriously injure anybody in a fight in a pub, because then what are you going to do tomorrow?
Yes.
Right? And generally, from what I've understood, the person who starts the fight is the one who trained everybody else how to fight.
That's why you trained them.
Yeah, otherwise, you know, what are you supposed to do in a pub, right? You know, this is in Ireland, we're not talking about it. You know, in England, they just sit down and have a meal and talk and stuff like that. In Ireland, come on, that's a little bit more, a little more fun. Is that okay? So, therefore then, because they had that idea or that desire, then Krishna fulfilled that desire that they were the ones that became, you know, the demons that Krishna then fought with. So, yeah. Yeah. You never heard that one? Okay, yeah, I can't remember the reference either. It's one of those stories that came up in the 90s when all the nectar was being dug out, yes.
Vishwanath, he touches on this point of the Jayan Vijay's desire in the commentaries to verse 26 to 34 in this chapter.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's coming up. In these verses, it is clear that Jaya and Vijaya were the Supreme Lord's personal associates. The four Kumaras, however, were more distantly associated with the Lord. Associating, okay. That Jaya and Vijaya were personal associates with the Lord and the four Kumaras were not is confirmed by these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-37. At that very moment, the Lord, who is called Padmanabha, because of the lotus grown from his navel, and who is the delight of the righteous, learned about the insult offered by his own servants to the saints. This is confirmed by the following words spoken by the Supreme Lord. Right? So, therefore, that they're his own servants to the saints. That means they're part of his entourage. This is also confirmed by the following words spoken by the Supreme Lord in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-40. To me, the Brahman is the highest and most beloved personality. The disrespect shown by my attendants has actually been displayed by me, because the doormen are my servitors. I take this to be an offense by myself. Therefore, I seek your forgiveness for the incident that has arisen. So here he's again confirming that they are a personal associates. Right? And by doing this, then the Kumaras actually understand the position of these personalities. Because otherwise they're just thinking they're unqualified, they're imposters, they don't belong here. Now they find out, no, they're the Lord's eternal associates. So now they're going to feel bad. But you see how the culture is done. So the point is the Lord can use these techniques because he's dealing in a cultured environment. Right? In other words, you can take responsibility. Yes, I am wrong in this way, as long as the other person understands the culture and then says, okay, that's in here, but in these areas everything is fine, so therefore we'll balance that all out and make it all work nicely. Yes. But if you have someone who, as soon as you surrender, they take advantage of it, then according to the scriptures, you're not supposed to surrender. This whole idea of being nice and truthful and open and honest, that's only amongst people who are truthful, open, and honest. Yes. You have no obligation to be truthful to someone who is not truthful. It's just the way it works. But the untruthful person wants you to be truthful, because then they'll get what they want, and then they'll use it for their own means. So it's not according to Shastra. They'll quote, oh, truth and knowledge and openness, but what's the Shastric reference? No, it's just a political reference. Because the modern political social environment works good if there is some trace of these things. At least people think there is. You know, at least that illusion should go on. What's the problem when you find out that those in the positions of authority don't have those qualities, right? It's a big thing and everything like that. And, you know, talk about this and removing this one and that one. So much hullabaloo is going on. But the problem is that no one wants to keep it like that, because if there's not those good qualities, so they want to think the next guy will be perfect. This guy was a rat bag. We'll vote for the next guy because he'll be perfect. And then we find out, oh, he was a rat bag also. But this guy will be perfect. Because if there's not that hope, how do you hold the social fabric together? How do you involve yourself in it?
Yes. That's why we get sometimes some heavy reactions when we're preaching.
Yes. Yeah. But the thing is you have to maintain that what they're looking for is real, but it's not found here. If you just go in and say, oh, this is all nonsense and that, and leave them with nothing, then that's not real. You may get some surrender, but it's not that they'll develop faith. In a sense. So that's what I was saying. You have to balance all these things. Is that the person has faith in authority, but he's putting into the wrong authority. So you have to leave faith and authority intact, but show that there is actual authority. In other words, these things are only ideals that are talked about, but not actually accomplished. That's why you see then afterwards, it's just like I mentioned, you see it so many times, you're going in the magazine, there'll be sometimes a 5-6 page advertisement, full color. It's all nice and green and leaves and everything like that, and talking about the world and this and how wonderful and green and, you know, have to maintain and everything, all wonderful, wonderful. Who put out the ad? The oil company. Right? You know? And so why do they put those out? Because when a tanker goes down, it's not remember exactly them. Like that.
Think of the leaves and the trees.
Yes. It just crossed my mind. This is why Jesus' preaching didn't work 2,000 years ago. Because the environment wasn't.
Yeah. No, because it's like the 12 apostles were the best of what was there.
They were all low class.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, every last one of them, when, you know, push came to shove, they had, Jesus.
What?
Never heard of
it. I don't know.
I don't know.
Then in this connection with the ambition that when the prophet came, it means we were better than those guys 2,000 years ago.
Because there he wasn't preaching religion, he was preaching sub-religion. See, so when you're dealing with people that basically anamoy is their platform, to get them up to pranamoy is good. But when you're dealing with people who are in pranamoy, then you can try to... But it's just a matter of they come to try to establish and everything, and then, you know. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada's coming as, because now Lord Chaitanya's come, so then it's within the mission. So the founder Acharya within the Gaudiya line then comes, and so of course they're going to do something special. Right? But I mean, he had thousands of followers and everything, and they had that faith and everything like that, so that's there. It's just a matter of then how far they're going to take. It's just like your Buddhism went for 2,500 years or something. You know, until then it was, the next step was introduced. So you have to start somewhere. If people are behaving badly, you have to bring them to a neutral point and then bring them to the positive. Does that make sense? So here you're bringing them from, you know, being very distracted, very, either very grossly sensual or very political. You know, the devotional element was not, you could say, famous. You know, and being told that it's not was not appreciated. Therefore, John G. didn't make it very far. Right? Like that. So, in that environment, then they're the people, and as time goes, they get more and more situated. So we see as it goes, they get. But then the problem is then you get that kind of apasampradayic thing, where it's all about fitting in. We want to, you know, move in the social circles. That's how we're going to get established. And on the mundane platform, yes, it is. But as far as that direct devotional thing, then that gets lost. Does that make sense? So then one gets distracted. Is everybody catching these contexts? Or? So at least then they were, even though they may not have been that developed on socially, but they were in faith. While you see is then 50 years later, the person was very developed socially, but not actually in faith. Because he figured we have to adjust the faith to make it popular. And he adjusted it, and it became popular. But it actually isn't what was originally given. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the problem. You know, so that balance, all those different things, that since then they haven't worked out because it doesn't match. You know, the lifestyle and the philosophy don't match. But with the original crew, the lifestyle and philosophy matched. Does that make sense? So if you remove the lifestyle, in other words, his attack was on the old tradition, old rituals and like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same as, oh, we're modern, we don't follow Varnashram, we're not into all these rituals. It's the same thing. We just want to finish in. It's not any different. But the problem is you become popular that way, then where's the substance? So you have individuals that stand out, but you don't have the mass really standing out. Well, before, the mass had some standard. Does that make sense?
So in our process from Shraddha to Prema, should we more concentrate on the steps, like step by step, or should we take it as a one, you know, more like a dynamic process?
Yes. Yes. In other words, you have to see the goal and see it as one that these are, that it's there, but be aware of the steps as necessary, but not to the point you forget the goal. Like that's what you're saying. Like someone gets so absorbed in the Narta Nivritti that they forget about this for Krishna. They're just trying to be detached or renounced, or you know, he's going to sit himself down. He's going to, like the great sages, you know, sit him down in the middle. You know, sit in a circle of buckets of halava with one right in front of him, right? And then meditate and not get distracted. Artificial, no?
It's the nature of the soul.
Yes.
blasphemy.
Don't
even joke about these things.
Yes.
It is no obligation to be truthful, open, and righteous if the others are not.
But it doesn't mean in your personal life you're not, but you don't have to reveal things to others, because people want to know everything, right? Someone comes up to you and they want to know everything about what you've done in your life. Why? Because they can find a fault, they got something to talk about with their friends, and they can feel themselves more superior than you because they found a fault. So it's not that the discussions are necessarily, you know, actually personal. I mean, personal meaning as in a relationship. It's personal that they as a person want to know this for their own benefit. Does that make sense? So it's just like you have the thing, remember in Manu, that one of the ways to purify yourself is to go into the assembly of, you know, Brahmins and sages and the kings when they're doing a big sacrifice and say what's wrong. And then they'll consider it and everything, and then at the end of that sacrifice when they all take their bath, you know, the Avrita Snan, you take bath with them and you're considered purified because you've spoken it in front of qualified people. The modern idea is, no, if you just speak the truth, you're purified. No. You know, it's like the Chinese thing. You know, the guy gets up there in front of everybody and says, "I'm so terrible. I'm so this and that." And then, ideally, he shoots himself. And then, you know, then they don't have to deal with it. You know, yeah.
Do they practice it today?
Mm-hmm.
Do they practice it today?
I was very shortly up to some time back. It was, you know,
shooting also.
That I'm not sure about. That they'll do somewhere else. But, you know, but he's got to come up and say in front, and so they feel good. But they're not qualified. The person's not purified by that. He just, you know, it just creates a sense of, not insecurity, but, you know, that you're just terrible. And that's what they want, because they think you are. So they want you to also know that you're terrible. But it's not that they have a method to purify you or to uplift you or anything like that. Therefore, that method of purification isn't actually being properly applied. It's a proper method, but it's not the method to use for those who socially can't deal with it, because you're using a social method. So you have to deal with that with someone who has that social qualification. You can say, no, but these are all devotees. Yes, philosophically and devotionally they have the proper thing, but they don't necessarily have the social. Right? That will come with time. By the devotional process, it'll come. But if it's not there now, you don't. You know, it's like, I can't cook a cauliflower sabji if I've just put the seeds in the ground. I can say, no, but you should cook. No, I can only cook when there is a cauliflower. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because you see, what do people do with this so-called truth? They just put it out on the internet. And they're absolutely not responsible. What will happen in that? They wash their hands. They forced here it's not hand, but they forced my fingers. You know? What could I do? Mm. By their behavior, I had to do this. I had to tell everybody. I had to
say. I'm worried about them.
It's just like, and who cares? What has it got to do? It happened in Temple A. What has Temple Z got to do with it? They never even heard of the devotees. So how is that going to affect them, that the guy, you know, whatever it is, he stole the Mahaprasad and ate it all himself or something? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, what's it going to do?
Teach them a lesson.
Yeah. You know, yes, you have to set an example. But that set an example has never worked out. Any culture who's used that as a method always was destroyed by the people they were setting the example for. Every time. It always works out. It always works. Because that means if I'm saying you have to set example, means you're weak. No, you should be setting the example. If you have to use those as methods, means you're about to lose it. Does that make sense? So, does that make sense? So, Therefore, if the culture environment isn't such, you have to deal according to that environment. Right? If you have, like here, a very open environment, proper environment, then the Lord can say, I'm at fault here because my servant has done this. He doesn't necessarily know that this is done, but the servant is their representative. So if the servant does something wrong, there. So how personal, how close is the relationship? That's what the Kumaras are figuring out. That the Lord would take responsibility for the gatekeepers, though technically he's not knowing what's going on. How close is the relationship? That their fault's my fault. But it also means their glory is my glory. You know what I'm saying? If they do something good, then you appreciate, you're happy about that. Right? So they get the credit when something's great because you're connected to them, so you feel happy. But they do something wrong, you get the responsibility. So we want to take, we reverse it. When something's great, we want to, yeah, I told him that, but he did it. You didn't do it. You've been thinking about it for 20 years. You've never done it. They did it. They heard from you, but you've told millions of people and they never did it. So it's not your potency. It's the other person that they heard it. They did it. They get the credit. And if something goes wrong, it says, "Oh, I didn't vote for it. I abstained." You understand? Sorry. Does that make sense? Yes.
It just reminds me, it's a crazy example, but the doctors, they... When lady is pregnant, they don't know who it is, so the couple comes and they ask, and the doctor says, it's the girl.
Right.
And then in the paper, he writes, it's a boy. And then when if it is a girl, then everybody is happy by default. And then if they come to complain, then he says, look, I didn't tell you, it's a boy. Because it's written here.
Okay, just in case. Okay. So it is what
from,
he said. He's covered both
covered
sides.
Both
yeah,
sides.
Yeah. He covers from both sides. That's the what do you call it? If you're expert at political correctness, you know how to write a resolution that it covers all angles. So if it goes this way, it's right here. If it goes that way, see, it's right here. Yeah. Like that. So that's the whole point. Is you don't have to be actually. You don't have to follow Dharma when you're dealing with people who aren't Dharmic. You know what I'm saying? It's not that you do something wrong. It's just that you don't take these extra steps. You know, the Lord could just come out and go, okay, what's happening here? You know, like that. Okay, don't do this or you do that. Or, you know, hey, these are sages. They may be small, but, you know, you let them in next time. You know, like that. And hey, you know, what are you doing? You know, so like that, but no, it's the cultural aspects are coming out. So that's what you understand what I'm saying. We're not saying that you do something wrong. We say you can't apply these refinements of the culture if there isn't an environment of culture, right? Unless you have a purpose. But when you apply it with that purpose, it doesn't. I mean, its effect is great, but it doesn't work out so great for you. So if it's all right, then you know. You'll end up out on there on the hill on your own, you know, how you say, personally made little cross there. You know. You know, does that make sense? So it has an effect. But if the timing is right, then you do can do. Because it will have an effect. But if it's not, then you don't. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like Prabhupada with that one gentleman, I think it was in London, right? With the deities?
Yes.
The rich man, he had these deities. They heard about the deities. So Prabhupada goes there, is talking and this and that. The guy just wants to get money. But he's trying to be nice and pleasant as if, you know, he's trying to be the more subtle to it. He's not saying, you know, like that, you know, so, you know, put down the money you can touch, you know. like that. So then Prabhupada's just dealing on that level. They're just talking and interfacing, just everybody's being nice, and that Prabhupada says, take the deities. And, you know, they keep talking, and the guys, you know, kind of, you know, because he doesn't want to do that, and then they get it all, and then Prabhupada comes out and says, drive. Because the guy might come out, just drive. You know, so the door is up. No, drive. So they just drive. If they go some blocks, they know they're away, and the guy's not following. Then he says, stop. Right? Then he goes out and offers the patience. Right? Because you're dealing in an environment of greed, so you just have to counteract that. You can't be, oh, we'd like these, you know, like that, why don't you don't, you know, like that? Because they're going to say no. Wax collection.
I was thinking about that.
This is where, how you say, transformations of the mind and body. Hair standing up.
Yes. Tears in the
eyes. Yeah. Yeah, probably so. Or with that, what's his name? That one in New York also, while he was away, I think Brahmananda was working with this... this lawyer guy. So the guy was a shark. All he did was, he was really nice. He's one of these super smooth kind of, you know, slick. They look very nice, but they're complete cheaters. And so he had tricked Brahmananda. Taken the money but hadn't gotten anything yet. And so Prabhupada wasn't there. When he came back, then he simply told one of the devotees, go tell the guy he's back. So immediately then things, you know, okay, got the money back, everything. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah, So if you have a, you know, Rottweiler foaming at the mouth and barking at you, you don't sit down and go, my dear Rottweiler, actually, you're not this body, you're the eternal son. So, you know, like that. So. You don't do that. Okay, stop it.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nityai Gaur.